Welcome to the Flute View Radio. This is Viviana Guzman for theflutview.com.
Hello, everybody. My name is Viviana Guzman, here for the Flute View magazine. And I have an amazing guest this morning. This is the king and queen of the flute. This is Sir James Galway and Lady Jeannie Galway. Hello.
Hello, Viviana. We are connected.
Hello. Good to see you, Sir James.
It's been a long time.
It's been, last time I saw you was 2 years ago, and then everything stopped. A year ago, you were supposed to play here in San Francisco.
That's right, and you were organizing a very nice class for us at the San Francisco Flute Society, your organizations, and then everything happened.
Yes.
It all came down.
So, Sir James, what have you been up to in this year of lockdown? Please tell us.
Well, we've been doing a lot of teaching online, and I've been doing a lot of editing music. And, you know, when you start editing music, your mind goes in all other directions. And I thought I might write a book on scales and sonority combined.
Yes, absolutely. I would be the first to get it.
Okay.
That's wonderful. Yes. So you've been editing. What music have you been editing?
Mainly the music that I play in recitals.
Okay.
Because I think that's where the most music is played, in recitals.
Exactly. Yes. And I love the idea of having an exercise, your own tone development book. Yes?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Moyes one is very good, but he says in the very first paragraph of the book, he said, this book will not guarantee a good tone.
That's right.
He's right. It doesn't. But it is a method that we've used and tried, and it's a good method.
Yes, it is. But we're also ready for 2.0, the Galway version.
Yeah. Actually, you did start that years ago. You started that, remember? And you were working with LeDuc, but then, of course, things changed in the business.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And our friend passed away, so that kind of didn't work anymore. But you have been writing a lot. It's wonderful. I come down to breakfast sometimes and his iPad will be open because he'll get up in the middle of the night and start writing. And then I'll see this whole thing on breathing, this whole thing on tone, and I'll think, this is amazing. What is this doing on the iPad? So I think we're finally having a little time to put it into action,
right.
You know, into a book.
That sounds perfect.
You know what the Turian takes out of you, Viviana. You concentrate on the tour. That's it.
Yes.
And then you get home and you unpack and you go on another tour. I mean, we've been blessed. But here we are. You know, we're home. It's snowing outside. It's beautiful. It's safe. And it's nice. We have our tulips all over, right?
And right outside the window are 15 cows.
The cows arrived a few days ago. So we're really kind of, we're just right near where we were when you met us, but it's a little more nature-like. It's wonderful. It's just a great place to be during this time. It's very invigorating. It's invigorating.
Well, our house is a state-of-the-art architectural statement.
Aha!
Right in the middle of a farm.
Yeah.
Yes, I stayed there about maybe a mile up on the hill. Right,
yes.
Above you when I was,
yes.
There.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
You did. It's a beautiful village. It's very nice.
And so, the cat's name where I was staying, they called him Sir James.
The cat.
The cat. Oh, don't talk about cats. We got a problem with the neighbor's cat. The cats have adopted us. We can't even leave the doors open anymore. And but the birds do too. The birds, you know, the birds love flute playing, of course.
Yes, they do. Well, Sir James, tell us about the. So, what kind of challenges have you? We have all undergone a lot of modifications and pivoting. And what have you both done this past year to sort of just, you know, that's been revolutionary for you?
Well, revolutionary for me is actually sleeping.
That's great.
I never slept so much in my life.
Yes. Yeah.
But I mean, it's, I don't know. It's a real gift to have this free time and do what you want. Play the flute that you want. Get out a few flutes and try them, you know. Try my old Muromatsu, the one with the diamonds in it. Oh, by the way, you can hear me play the Ebert Flute Concerto with the New York Phil and Lauren Mazel.
Yes, it's their new webcast, and it says with the maestros or something, and or with the stars, I forget that. And we had gotten a link, and we hadn't listened to it, and it just came up on my phone, and I started listening. He walked in, and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "That's you playing the Ebert Flute Concerto with Lauren Mazel." It was the opening of the New York Philharmonic already back in 2008, but what a treasure to have with Maestro Mazel in his final season to be the opening guest artist and to play the Ebert. And it's quite a performance. So we're gonna try to get some clips of those, so maybe we can get one to you. It will take a little bit of time. It is the New York Phil, so. No, I think that we've achieved a good balance, and that's,
yeah.
We've always been working towards a balance anyway in our lives. You know that, Viviana, between all the work, because we get to do it together, and health is a big part of our lives, and eating well, and fitness and walking. We go walking every day here, and we're right down above from the lake too, so we can go around there. But I think the pandemic for all of us, it went in a lot of phases, but we never, I think we have more experience with dealing with situations in life than, say, our students do, a 20-year-old does, an 18-year-old does, or a 30-year-old. And so that's why, as you know what we've done, we just immediately went into action. And we decided that we would start this home series with Sir James. And we started that right away in the pandemic. And it was all going to be free for at least 6 months, which we did. And so because we just wanted to build everyone up. And then I started these series where I would just talk to the students. And the feedback we got was that it really helped, and that's all we care about. It was a technical challenge for us too. We're not like you. We're not as tech savvy as you are, but we got there, and we built a filming studio in our music library. We took all the library, half the music, and put it in storage, and so it's all ready to go, so we can walk in there anytime with the lights and the cameras and everything, and you know how important that is, and not to have cables all over where you fall on them.
And we have a harpsichord in there.
Yes.
All tuned up and ready to go.
Yeah, we're just waiting for the harpsichord. But we did discuss the harpsichord could come with a mask, and we could stand in the hallway. But now they have a new law here that actually, if you're in the same area, you have to wear masks, everyone. So I don't know, but... I don't know. But we do have those alto flutes sitting there where we're supposed to record duets on.
Well, we can do that when we get
I know, but if they've been sitting there for 6 months, we really should do something.
I know.
The series that you were describing, is that what you're calling the Live Learn series?
Oh, the Live Learn. Live Learn.
Live Learn?
Yeah, the Live Learn series. Well, the home series was, we just called it that because home, from our home to yours. And Live Learn was launched halfway. Live Learn originally came as a concept many years ago when we built the Galway Flute Academy. So part of the site was going to be when Sir James had time, he would come online and he would teach some students, and students could send questions in. But since everything changed, we had to up the motor there and get at least the first part of the Live Learn series out, which would mean that basically it is the umbrella for all our online work. And now that everything is online, And we are building now onto a platform, the same platform we're using for the festival this summer, the whole Live Learn series, which is going to incorporate, we call it Sir James's Corner, that's the working title, where he will be teaching etudes, and he'll have his, like they have the etude of the week, but he'll be really teaching them.
Well, one of the things that I try to do with every student is to make a plan. Mm-hmm. You see, most students don't have a plan. They just sort of get the flute out and tootle around on it for a bit, then go and have a coffee or something like that. But I like to give them a plan so that they can cover everything. For example, they should do sonority, which is in a way tone development. That's what they should do first. Then carry the tone development over into the scales so that you play the scales with the same good tone that you just developed. And then you do some etude studies, mm-hmm. preferably those written by a flute player. You know, I don't see the point in taking violin etudes on board because they don't contain the same problems as flute studies written by flute players. And then, of course, comes repertoire. And if you're in the mood and you want to get a job, play orchestral studies. So this should all take about maybe 2 hours.
So he'll be taking each part of these and building his own little method, I could call it, couldn't you, to help the students with the practice. And then he'll be working on the repertoire also. And one of the things that we're pushing him to do is the Bach sonatas. Right, to teach the Bach sonatas, because with those recordings that you have.
Right. You know, the second time I played in Carnegie Hall, I played all 7 Bach sonatas, one after the other. Yes. I don't know anybody who's done that before. Not even the old flute players.
Plus encore.
Yeah, right.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, it really is impressive, I tell you. And you know, when we study articulation, it's a common byword that the French are good at it because the French language is so articulate. But what about Galway with his super articulation? What about Emmanuel Pau and some of these other guys. I mean, what about Denis Buryakov? He's not bad. He's Russian. So, you know, I discovered why the French are good at it, because whereas when we have a book of music and there's articulation in it, it's not great. There maybe there's 3 or 4 pages, but in the Taffanel and Gobert there's 22 pages. So that's why they're good at it. But then also, you know, in the Taffanel, they spend a lot of time playing these violin things, you know, so forth. And I think you should not do that. I think you should waste your time on a piece that's written by Bach, like the unaccompanied solo flute piece, the C major sonata, the E minor sonata, with all these terribly difficult things. So you might as well use your time to produce something that you're going to play in public.
Yes. You know, my very first time to meet you was in Aspen.
Oh, look at us.
I was going to show you.
And right. The number one thing I learned at that moment, you weren't really teaching back then because you were busy being a soloist and traveling around the planet.
Yeah.
And But you demanded that we all play everything memorized. And I thank you for that today, because that it really pushed me to memorize absolutely everything. And it's so important.
Yes, it is.
That's interesting, Vivian, because I noticed that on your in your playing, and I'm always in awe of that. I have to compliment you on that.
It's because of Sir James.
Isn't that something? Well, that's why, of course, the students that perform for him in his festival have to play from memory. You know.
Talk to us a little about the festival. You're continuing online, and give us the dates and registration.
Yes.
Let me put you under my travel agent here.
First of all, this is our favorite thing in the year, as you know. It's we look forward to it the whole year, and this is Sir James's favorite time, which is why this is our Galway Flute Festival. There we are. We were probably, that was probably the year you were there, Viviana. I'm not sure if that was the 30th anniversary.
The 30th,
that photo.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've made it in June this year because we didn't want to not compete, but there's so many choices in July and August. And so we made it a little shorter because it's online. You know, normally our festival's 10 days. And 10 full days. And so I think we have 7 days now. And so it's the 20th, 6 days, 20th to the 25th and of June. So that is starts on a Sunday, ends on a Friday. And there will be full days online. We basically take the whole entire festival and put it online. Everything that you experienced in Becky's at that time. This festival started 32 years ago with just a masterclass. And it's developed over the years. And just by seeing what the students need. Little by little, we brought in guest artists, including yourself. And we choose our guest artists very carefully because they're the ones that can be accessible to our students to study with.
And who do you have this year coming?
Oh, this year. Well, actually, I think everyone had a little shock when all the guest artists said yes, because it's a shorter festival, but more guest artists. We have 13 guest artists. You want to read them off, Sir James?
Yeah. Emily Bynum, solo flutist of the Royal Concertative Orchestra. Dennis Buryakov, solo flutist, Los Angeles Philharmonic. Aaron Borakov, international soloist. Sylvia Cardew, international soloist, but also she just got the job in the French National Radio Orchestra.
And she's teaching at two conservatories.
It's a terrific orchestra, and it's a great long line of fantastic flute players. I remember when I was a kid and studying in Paris, I used to go and hear them once a week. And the flute player there was Dufresne, and he was a wonderful player. So next is Gareth Davies, who's the solo flutist of the London Symphony. Then Stefan Ragnar, Holstulson, solo flutist of the Chicago Symphony. Francesco Loi, solo flutist, Carlo Felice Theatre Orchestra in Genoa. Niccolo Massante, former piccolo flutist, Maggio Musicale, Fiorentino Orchestra. Kirsten McCall, solo flutist of the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra. You know, the big orchestras in Europe have two solo flute players. And there's no difference between them. They're the guys. I mean, when I was in the Berlin Philharmonic, my partner, or the other solo flute player, was Andreas Blau.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, very good player too, I tell you. Kirsten, you have to see his lessons. They're fantastic. He is one of the greatest exponents of modern music that I know. It really makes sense the way he plays it.
I heard Paganini Caprice, his version of it. Do you remember
that? Yeah, I know. Wasn't that his encore?
Yes.
Yeah. And Lorna McGee, who's a solo flutist of the Pittsburgh Symphony. Ulla Milman, who's a solo flutist of the Danish National Symphony Orchestra. Karl Heinz Schütz, solo flutist of the Vienna Philharmonic.
Yeah.
Thaddeus Watson, former piccolo flutist, Frankfurt Radio Symphony Orchestra.
It's quite a lineup, but I would just like to add that all these flutists we have relationships with. And for instance, Denis Burikov came to study with Sir James when he was 13.
Wow.
From Russia. And
well,
I
wouldn't let Denis.
Remember this?
I wouldn't let him talk to his minder. He had this lady who was looking after him, and she smoked like terrible. And I said, listen, if you're going to smoke, Denis is coming with me, and you come at the end of the day.
And we have.
We're not having you smoking, blowing smoke all over this kid.
Anyway, and Denis came, and we were able to mentor him and help him through some friends to be able to go to the Royal Academy of Music. And so it's been a very special relationship with him, and also then when he was looking for the LA Phil. And Aaron is a beautiful player too. Sylvia Gareth and Stefan Ragnar Holskason is a student of Sir James's from Becky's also. And Kirsten McCall and everyone, Lorna Ula gives such, we all know Ula, she such beautiful lessons on Nielsen. Nielsen is so important. Carl Heinz Schutz tells the story that the first CD his parents put on was a James Galway CD. And that's the story they all tell. And Emily.
That's all our story.
But this is why it's so important to do this and for me to help put this together with our friends, because to me, we have to celebrate the legacy of this great man. See, he doesn't see it that way. He just wants to teach, but we want to celebrate him and all he has to say. So even though we are online, we're also going to change it over from our webinar to Zoom so that the students can see each other. We're going to have our greeting. We have some fun things also happening. We will have Rising Star concerts. We have Seher Karibir and also Valerie Henning Walter this year, two students who you would probably remember from when you were there, who have come up the ranks, and they have been awarded the James Galway Rising Star Award. We don't have competitions at our festival. We just give awards. We will have some scholarships and other things, and we'll have classes with my husband, classes with myself, daily warm-ups. In my class, as you know, Viviana, but maybe everyone doesn't know, we have students of all levels. But this year, students were asking everyone, even if you're not coming to Sir James's class, to send in a little short video, even on your iPhone. We just want to see your level. That's all. So we can be prepared for you. So the deadline is next week. Yes, April 15th, American Tax Day, or the old American Tax Day. But it's April 15th for anyone wanting to perform in Sir James's class or mine. And so videos must be in. And we're already getting pretty full because we think it's pretty amazing because all these guest artists are going to be at your disposal and they're going to all be with us pretty much throughout the whole week. They each offer a masterclass and an interview and a concert. And you get Sir James's lessons and concerts online and the Rising Stars and the daily warm-ups and interviews with our manager and with business leaders. We have already asked Doug Wheeler, who has been a presenter for over 50 years in the performing arts, Washington Performing Arts, and has presented all the great artists, and the students will be able to ask him about these an artist series. They'll get advice as young artists how to work towards that. Our manager will be giving them advice. I can't confirm other people, but we have composers, we have conductors, and just to help them.
I just saw Morgan. She posted galwayflutefestival.com. That's where you go to sign up.
Yes. Thank you, Viviana. I forgot about that. We were getting to it. Galwayflutefestival.com. Yes.
I got to get a new roadie.
You got to get in. Yeah. It's okay. I will be retired anytime. No. Viviana will take over. Galwayflutefestival.com. Auditors. We have a special prize for you this year for the 6 days of all these tremendous artists, 13 artists, Sir James, myself, all the interviews, $300, 300 Swiss francs, which is about dollars. Yeah. And you get to, I think the auditors, yes, also get to watch everything for a month after. We're keeping everything online for a month. You know, there's so many online courses at the minute, right? This is something we were talking about. You have your thoughts on all this.
Yeah, but I'm not allowed to tell.
No, 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 not that. No, Viviana, you know how expensive it is to have a career.
Yes.
Have a career. And which is why we tell students to take it easy when they want to buy an expensive head joint when they don't have a flute that's really going to match it anyway. Or, you know, there are so many, these online courses are popping up all the time, which is great. Our message to the student is choose carefully. Choose the people that you've been watching their tutorials throughout the year, that you feel you can really learn something from. Not, oh, that sounds like a really good deal, I want to learn that piece. There are quite a few that we could put our stamp on that are there this summer. But we have to say that this is definitely one to put your stamp on, because if your dream is to maybe one day play in Europe or to study in Europe, this is your chance to study in Europe without the airfare, without having to live in student accommodations and all, and you know what it costs. And it's a really great opportunity, and that's why we're bringing it to you. This is not something, a money maker at all for us or anything like that. This is a passion. The passion of passing it on. So we hope that people will take advantage of it, because we had these advantages when we were young, right? Viviana, you had the lesson with Sir James. I had Marcel Moyse and Julius Baker and Ransom Wilson and, you know, all this. And they have James Galway still. And, you know, they have to take advantage now. We hope you will anyway. We hope.
Absolutely. Where else can you learn from the master, the one inspiration to us all? I mean, and then jam-packed with all his students and protégés as well. So,
yeah. Yeah.
And his lovely wife as well.
Thank you.
So, yes, everybody, please jot this down. Galway Flute Festival. The deadline is April 15th. The dates of the masterclass are June 20 through 25, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's jam-packed. It's beautiful. I can't encourage this enough. I have a question for Sir James. You mentioned playing when you were in the orchestra and your co-solo flutist was Andreas Blaus. How was it that you were able to jump from this solid income, steady income of principal of the Berlin Philharmonic to then jump into being a soloist?
Well, we planned it before I left the orchestra. And I had a pretty good thing going in England, you know, with lots of, I played lots of new music of composers, and a lot of these composers were producers on the BBC. So that was one thing. Another thing was,
had your own.
Oh, yeah, I had my own concert series. Get this one. Me and a harpsichord player and a gamba player played very swanky concerts in London at the bar, not the Barbican, the Queen Elizabeth Hall. It's an 800-seater. And we would play a Bach sonata and a Cooper and something or other. Then the intermission, come back, Cooper and something, finish off with a Bach sonata. And that was a program. And we were so successful with this that we planned lots of programs, taking them around the place, you know, playing them lunchtime in a cinema, sort of thing. I played all the Bach sonatas in a cinema in Bologna.
But before then, when you were in the room, I don't know if a lot of the students know Sir James's history, that he's played in many, many orchestras before the Berlin Philharmonic. And I believe when you were in the Royal Philharmonic, didn't you have the trio with Derek Wickens?
Yes, I did.
And you used to see, again, he was always playing concerts. And any great musician will tell this story. Elton John will talk about going up. Whoops. Sorry. Excuse us. We knew that was going to happen at one point. Okay. Yes. Okay. Excuse us, everyone.
Yeah, a trio with an oval player. Actually, I played tight end for 15 years. And it was so easy to play with him, you know, because he had such great intonation, great tone, everything. So we took these little concerts around England and played in sort of funny places. Like one time we played in a windmill.
Beautiful.
Some guy had a series going in a windmill, and we played that. And we just played all the little musical clubs, you know.
So you were building up your audience.
Yes.
And also because many radio stations will also always feature young artists.
Yes.
You build your name up. And that was your relationship with the BBC. So yes. When you walked out, it was already pretty much there.
The BBC, in fact, told me that I am the most recorded artist.
Visually, I believe.
Huh?
Visually.
Yes.
Aha. Oh, yes, that makes sense. Somebody told me you had your own radio show as well?
His own TV.
TV show.
His own TV show back.
Chum Wah Chum played on it. Jesse Norman sang on it.
But didn't you introduce Jesse Norman to
yes.
the public?
Yes.
Those are the ones that we sometimes post of Sir James playing the Bach C major, and you'll see him with the conductor. What was the name of the conductor? Conducting those little concerts with the orchestra when you did your own series.
Oh, Calvin.
Calvin, yeah. Calvin something. Anyway, that's what you see. And we were told also by a student of ours who was a former producer at the BBC, she remembers these filmings, and they were done with one camera, one take.
So, you know, when you hear me play on TV, the Sean Rosman from Chrysler, or the Goddard Waltz, that's one take.
Impressive. And
you know what I think is impressive? The Ebert flute concerto. We rehearsed it for 40 minutes, then had a break for about an hour, and then we played it live on TV.
That was a little nerve-wracking.
You can say that again.
I was nerve-wracked in the audience. I'll tell you, the New York Phil had just been on tour in Europe, and actually they were here in Lucerne, and we hosted a big party at our house for the flute players. Your table was so noisy. He was sitting with Robert and with Mindy Kaufman and everyone and all the wind players. And so we had about maybe 40 people or something. And I was at the management table, and it was so quiet, you know.
What's his name? Who was the leader?
Oh, Glenn left the Stradivarius at the house.
He left the Stradivarius.
The party was such a party that at the end, and they had a bus take them to our house after the concert because we had a big our big place there, and we would host a lot, and it was great. Anyway, so then the bus left, there was a violin sitting there, and we said, somebody left their violin, and then we I think the bus came back, I think they realized it. But Zarin Mehta was also the manager, and you know, that relationship goes back to when he was the manager at the at Ravinia, and a lot of these, and this is what also we're always telling the students, these relationships are so, so important. No one wants a high maintenance musician. And you know yourself, Viviana, from running your own courses. We don't want to know about high maintenance anything because it's training for the future. And because of these relationships that Sir James made, of never canceling, of not being difficult backstage, if the lights didn't work, the lights didn't work, you know, that's it. You're hoping that they work and you get there ahead of time. But so these relationships you had with the manager of the London Symphony, Ernest Fleischmann.
Yes.
All of a sudden, when he was principal of the London Symphony, when he came to America, what did Ernest do, who was the manager of the New York Philharmonic? He put him in three concerts in the Hollywood Bowl, and they all sold out.
I played nearly every piece that was written for flute and orchestra.
So, students, this is so important, these relationships.
Oh, including the Khachaturian I played.
I remember that. We had to stop and get a bottle of vodka. For after the concert as a gift. But you played the Four Seasons there, didn't you?
Yes,
also,
I did, yeah.
So, and that was the era when you would remember also Viviana. So it's all about relationships. You never know who your stand partner is, or that vocal player that maybe you really don't get along with in conservatory. It's going to be a manager of an orchestra or a promoter of an arts program that you really want to get on. So
you never know. Be nice to everyone.
Be nice, yeah.
Well, Sir James, you certainly have a history of resilience as well. You know, I've been talking about my car accident that happened, but then when Annie's song came out, you had this horrible accident as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I did. A guy ran over me. I was studying with Moise at the time, and I had my own class going on the side of all the Galwayites.
Galwayites.
We were all the Moiseites. And I went over every evening to see Marcel. And one evening, after we'd all finished in his class, we were walking home to the nearest hotel for a beer. And this guy came round a corner and hit me with a Yamaha 850. And in those days, a Yamaha 850 weighed a ton. Now they've got it sort of shaved down, and things are made from weight loss.
Aluminum. Yeah.
Stuff. Anyway, I had two broken legs and a broken left arm.
So you were walking and the motorcycle hit you.
Yeah. We were on a bend and he came around a corner. He came around this bend. And I think he nicked a telephone pole. And it threw him out of
alignment, and then it hit you.
Yeah.
And you went up in the air.
Oh yeah, when I came down, I had no shoes on. I really knocked my shoes off.
I went
and stayed in the hospital for, I stayed in the hospital, I think, for 4 months. And then I was on crutches and wheelchairs and stuff for 2 months. But that was interesting.
Yeah, I'm saying you are. Oh, jeez, I'm so sorry. So sorry. And you have those photos in your book, you think, Galway, the first file of your legs in traction there. But you used to give flute lessons still from your hospital bed.
It was for my students. It was for them like a gift from heaven because they had me nailed down. I wasn't
nailed down.
And the surgeon who is just going on vacation, who became a very good friend, actually, he always tells his story. He was going on vacation and you arrived that night.
Yeah.
Because his legs were basically not splintered. They were splintered.
Wow.
And they had to do all this complex surgery and then see how they were and more surgery.
And you said your arm as well?
Yeah, left arm.
Left
but
arm.
Later on, I fell down the stairs and
broke the right arm, just so that you know he could be even.
Just so I could.
There's never a dull moment in the Galway home. So we now have a new place with no stairs. It's very flat, and so it all seems to work well.
And it's funny, you know, when we watch TV, I say to Jeannie, "Listen, I think I'll go up to bed."
He go up to bed, yeah. He's still thinking we're living in the other place.
We used to go up to bed in the other place. We went upstairs.
But now, anyway. But Viviana, for you, it's been quite a journey, too. It's been a terrible journey for you. We're all happy to see you looking so beautiful. And
I have just been saying, before I was strong, and now I'm invincible.
Right.
But this is what it comes from, right? And this is the spirit of what we've been given of pursuing our careers, and this is for the students, you know, finding it from within every day, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's the greatest gift. I mean, that's the achievement. Achievement is, you know, as we're older here and we can sit back and we can think, you know, I did that really well. Did that really well. So if they don't get this job or don't get that audition, it's just another, you know, it's part of that journey. Part of that journey. So that when things do happen, like you get hit by a motorcycle, or you, in your case, yours was a little more serious, you're able to handle those things.
Well, Lady Jeannie, I have a question for you. What's the key to a successful long-term marriage?
Well, first of all, being in love with your best friend. Respect. Respect is the word. Besides having the right partner, I think that's what it is. You respect each other. You respect yourself, but you respect each other and you find your way within that. Finding your way is so important, and it's so important for a woman to find their way, for each of them, because many people marry very young. I was actually only 27 when I moved here. That's pretty young, but I was successful enough and had done my stuff in New York, and he was my best friend, and I had never met someone that loved the flute like I did. Remember the poems you used to write me?
Yeah.
He used to write me poems all the time, and he used to come visit my little apartment, and we laughed all the time. And that's what it was all these years. And you learn to listen to each other, and you just have patience. And...
Well, I still do write to you.
He does now. He starts to leave me notes around the house now.
I left a note on her wardrobe saying, "See you inside."
And I'm looking inside.
A little
paper,
a little piece of paper with a ghost going boo.
You see, he keeps it fresh. He keeps it fresh, but you know, it's work. It's finding. It's constantly fine. It's like any relationship. It's like any friendship, and we change over the years. But we've been very blessed because we do laugh a lot and we share the same love. But I have tremendous respect for him on so many levels. As a musician, as a flutist, as a, you know, whenever you know yourself that I've shared with you, concerts, you know, there's, his clothes are done and ready to go. And it doesn't mean that, like some people will say, well, no, I won't do that. That's my husband. Well, you know, it's about sharing things. It's like you would do for your best friend. And one time he said to me, I think that I was a little upset about something. And he said to me, you wouldn't speak to your best friend like that, would you? And he says, and I'm supposed to be your best friend. And you know what? That changed my thinking. And I realized this is my best friend. And so it's respect. And then you learn the respect also within yourself so that you can find your place. Because to find a place in this marriage that was so controlled when we first, I was young, and that was the height of his career. And it was, we didn't even own a car. It was so controlled. I mean, it was every movement was controlled, and little by little. And one day I said, you know, I really don't want to go to China for New Year's. We have to have Christmas off. And he handed me a computer and he said, if you want to have a day off, you learn how to use this computer and you work with the managers. And I thought, this is going to save my marriage. Because, you know, we're talking about controlled. I mean, the guy was with record companies, and there were always people, whether it was Muramatsu building flutes or it was the RCA BMG people or it was managers at the house. We were never, ever alone.
Italy was the funniest. I was the
funniest.
I was like the Pied Piper.
Oh, and then all the flute players. Oh, yeah, this is funny, too. Then we get married, all the flute players come on tour with us, too. And
I mean, they came on tour with us.
Everybody came on tour with us. Wherever we went, it was like this whole
entourage.
And you know, it's very hard when you're young and when you're in love, and it's like there's no time for that.
These guys came into our hotel
dressing room. They would be watching him warm up with his embouchure, and I'm trying to get dressed, and it was a learning curve. I can tell you more learning curves, but you know, we also had like these little checks from time to time. He'd write me a letter and he'd say, he'd leave me a little note and say, I just want to have more walks with you on the lake. So we always kept working towards finding this place together. And so I did learn about how the business went. I realized that the 20-year-old manager and assistant sitting in the office didn't care if my husband at the age of 60 was working nonstop. So I stopped arguing with them and we just started to plan it. And little by little, learned about that and learned about how the finances ran, what contracts were like, and all this. And so today, I have this knowledge, but it saved my marriage, our marriage. And it was really a survival thing, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, you like it. Today we went over to our office. Esther, lovely Esther, is still here, you know, and there's a couple of contracts there. There's this, there's that. But it's a different time in our life now. Now we can enjoy it. And my husband doesn't really want to travel anymore. And we'll come back to America when things open up. But we'll see. We'll see. I think it's time to look after people. Look after our students and ourselves. So that's, respect is the
beautiful.
Word.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Sir James, do you have a favorite country?
Well, we were discussing this the other day. And I said, before I die, I would like to visit Japan.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
I just remember Japan. I want to go back to Miami and go to the beach.
Yeah, okay, we can do that.
I go back to America.
Because
I want to get to America.
I had such a great time in Japan. You know, at that time when I went, nobody heard of Mr. Cooper. He was a sort of secret of the London flute players. And all these guys in London, they could play intonation. It was fantastic because of Cooper. And so I went to met Muramatsu and they showed me their flutes. And they said, why don't you play these flutes? And I explained that the scale was ancient and that they should make it with a Cooper scale. So you won't believe this. They took my Cooper flute and after about 5 days, they gave me a silver flute made by them, exact copy of my Cooper. And I thought, wow, this is the bee's knees. And from then I started to play Muramatsu's.
Well, then they came on tour with us with everyone.
The only difference between them and the Italian kids coming on tour.
They didn't come in our room.
They didn't come in our room. No. We couldn't understand a word they said.
But it was, and who came on tour? This was really important. Or who we met in Japan. We were in Japan a lot. I mean, it's very special to go there. But, and I remember when they gave you your first gold flute, remember? They handed it, you showed it to me. It was in the safe.
Didn't give. Bought.
Yes, we bought. This is very important. Sir James has always bought all his flutes.
I never take a gift unless you have to send it back.
Yeah, this has been very important.
It's a bit embarrassing if you have to say.
But what's important is that who came with us was the chief himself, Osamu Muramatsu. He didn't always come to America, but who came was Aoki, Hiroshi Aoki, right?
The two big time.
And Mr. Sony.
Makers.
He was the head joint maker, and Sakabi. The three of them always came. They came to Switzerland, they come to our house for a week, they would just sit and watch him play, and the dinners were long, and it was just, he would talk, and then there'd be all this Japanese, and then back and forth, and back and forth, and that's how he came to work with them, with the flutes. And recently, when we wrote to them about, because that's gonna be part of our, is part of our projects too, is Sir James's flute collection and the history of each flute, and also that and the companies that he's been working with all these years that we never talk about because he doesn't need it for publicity or anything like that. That Muramatsu says that the flute that everyone plays on today is because of James Galway. And that's a real honor, you know, it doesn't have to have a name. And the other flutes that have his names on it were surprises,
mm-hmm.
right? The James Galway Nakahara was a complete surprise. It was the same year that Haynes decided to make a tribute to Sir James, because originally your first professional flute with the Haynes, wasn't it?
Yes.
And you played on that for how long? Until you got your first Cuba.
Well, I played. But when I got my first Cooper, I didn't get it with the headpiece.
Yeah.
I took the headpiece over the Haynes. Because Tafanel says, if you have a good flute and you want to sell it, sell the body, keep the head.
Don't tell everybody that. We're telling the kids always to buy a full flute.
Well, listen, they can do what they want, but that's what Tafanel said.
I remember meeting Albert Cooper. I went to his house because my teacher, Julius Baker, had asked for 3 or 4 head joints. And I was going to London. And so I went to London, went, knocked on the door, met him, super kind, humble gentleman. Yeah. And he handed me the head joints, and then off I went to New York. So,
very special.
Albert came to every concert I ever played in London.
Yeah.
And I remember he came to one concert when I played the Nielsen with the London Symphony or one of these orchestras. And I showed him the flute that he'd made. He asked to have a look at it. So we had a look at it and he gave it back to me and says, I don't know how you play that. Nothing works. Well, Albert, it's all yours. You can overhaul it. So he overhauled it. And then this is one of the things that made me think of getting a Muromatsu flute, was that they're not, you know, this business handmade, nothing is handmade. Everything is made with a machine. Hand assembled is what they're talking about. And I don't know anybody who has a machine that assembles a flute. So they're all handmade. Deck, deck, deck. And the thing about Muromatsu's flute at the time was all the keys were 2 or 3 different sizes, whereas with Cooper, nearly everything on it was different. And when you wanted to get a pad, they had to make a special pad for that key.
Which is why you bought 2 Muromatsus in the beginning, because then when one would go wrong, you would have another one.
That's it.
That's exactly it. So then I was very fortunate, because then when he decided he didn't want the 14 karat, I got the 14 karat and he would get an 18 karat. So it was not bad getting a hand-me-down in our house. I wanted just to tell you one thing. Did you know that Albert Cooper made our wedding ring?
Wow.
Yes. He made our wedding rings. Yours is somewhere in a safe. I have to find it. Yes, he came to our wedding, and I asked him if he would make our wedding rings, and he brought them to us, and they were engraved just like his. He did on the flutes. Very, very special. He and his wife Mina came to our wedding here in Switzerland, so it's a very special tie.
Yes, that's beautiful. Well, it's because of your relationship with Muromatsu that then I, when I was a student at Juilliard, I had a 9-carat Muromatsu because of your influence and your, you know, you were the role model, and everyone did what Sir James Galway was doing. So I ended up with a Muromatsu as well.
So have you still got it?
I'm sorry?
Do you still have it?
No, I just got rid of it.
What?
You should have given it to, you should have told us, actually. We would have bought it because 9-carat is his favorite flute. And the 9-carat that, you know, that we had 5 flutes stolen in 1990 maybe or something. I don't even remember which year. We try to forget. But when we got married in 84, when Albert Cooper came, Osamu Muromatsu came also, and they had just finished the 9-carat flute, number 33333. That's why we remember it. And we have a photo of us at the pre-wedding party or something, him handing us this flute, which we bought, and me opening it up. I remember this, and it was so beautiful. And then Osamu had his Japanese robes on for our wedding, and it was quite a special moment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he came on his own without an interpreter.
That's right.
And then we realized how much English he could speak. Yeah, the 9-carat flutes are great. And of course, of that era, that was the era of what we call the golden flute, the age of golden flute making. Golden age of flute making. You had Sony on headpieces, you had Sakabi, and you really had this team that was working. And at that time, they didn't just make as many gold flutes as they do now. To get a gold flute then, it was very, very special. And
that's right.
But they still, because I don't know if you've ever visited the shop in Tokorozawa, but it is a pretty amazing production. And they do show us that with the tubing and how they process everything, they do the same thing for the silver flutes and the gold flutes. Just with the metal. So it is very high-end engineering. Fascinating, right?
Yeah.
Well, just as a effort to maybe start wrapping our hour up together, Sir James, I'm wondering if you have like maybe three top advice for young flutists.
Well, stop playing music that's written for violins. Play music that's written for flutes. And when you go on a platform, play flute music. Because look, you know all these Bach things that people play on the flute, which are originally a violin. Yasha Heifetz plays them much better. And I mean, nobody really wants to hear some of these big Bach solos on the flute, because they really just sound better on the violin. And I think number two is to learn a repertoire that you can use for 3 or 4 orchestral concerts and 3 or 4 different, okay. 3 or 4 different, 3 or 4 different recitals. Don't know if I have a number 3, I think that sort of wraps it up. I think,
but,
I don't know.
I think you would also have to have a method in your practice.
Oh yeah. Well, yes, of course, have a good method in your practice.
Very good. And Lady Jeannie, would you like to add anything to that?
I love our statement that we say, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. So when students talk about nerves and being afraid of doing things, first of all, this is a journey that you're on and it's using your gift, but you must prepare. And if you're prepared, you'll be just fine and you'll keep going. And it's just to have your goals, set your goals and keep going, and don't give up. Just don't give up. And a couple of wrong notes is not going to ruin your life. You'll be absolutely fine. So failing to prepare is preparing to fail. So if you've got an audition, you make sure that you're really, that's your focus. Keep your focus. Keep your focus.
It was an American president who said that.
Eleanor Roosevelt, a woman.
No,
a woman, yes.
Not her.
Yes, it is. I can Google it.
Google it.
No. Respect. Sorry. Yes, honey, of course. You're absolutely right.
Oh.
And you, Viviana, what would you like to, because our students will be watching this, and you're such an inspiration for many, many female players and for me, myself. And your kindness and your energy and your performances. What advice can you give our students during this time, this confusing time, this pandemic, and as they move forward?
I would say, do as Sir James says. That's number one. That's number
okay.
one.
Okay, number two.
Well, in my world, I think it's important to stay positive, because it's so easy to say, oh, you know, it's raining outside, or oh, my foot hurts, or whatever. I think it's important to turn it around and say, I can do this, and not let anything stop you. So the power of positivity is, for me, my number one tool.
Yes, and you have that. You have that. And we try to do that too. So I think that we're all on the, I think we're doing okay, right?
Yeah.
I think it's okay. So anyway, well, Viviana, we hope that you'll come back to the Veggies Blue Festival or wherever we're going to hold it when it's opened up and join us online this year. And that one time we'll make it back to San Francisco for you.
Listen, I just want to say one thing.
Yes, James.
When this whole thing quietens down, and people start to play on stage, be prepared.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're going to have auditions, because a lot of people will think during this lockdown, I don't really want to do this anymore. So there's going to be a ton of jobs open, and they'll give these jobs to the best people, the people with the best tone, the best scales, that you can play my etude if you want.
a flute etude.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I've loved this free time, as you have mentioned as well. And I've been practicing a ton, just because when I'm on tour, it's like it's so fast paced. And but now I've been able to focus.
Right, focus. That's what I was going to say. You're always talking about don't practice abstractly. I mean, just today, an audition was announced for the Danish National Symphony. You know, they're just going to start. And we know of a lot others that are open, but they haven't announced them yet. And we're hearing from colleagues. And so they have to be prepared, because sometimes it's not an audition like we think behind a screen with all this pre-screening. It's a phone call. It's a phone call where you come and sit in the orchestra. You know that young Luna Vigny, our student, she was a rising star when you were there, I believe.
Yes, I met her, yeah.
You know, she has a major position now in Germany.
What is she playing?
She's playing solo flute in the
Grootenecker
in Cologne.
Beautiful.
Great conductor, great soloist, and she's been playing through the pandemic. Her first job she walked into, she was prepared. And we didn't even hear that the position was announced. I think she's just been playing in orchestras. The conductor probably heard her a trial or she did an audition quietly. They're not always, it's kind of subtly. So relationships are important and being prepared and that focus.
I went to a concert once with the London Symphony, and they had somebody playing it. First flute, who was not in the orchestra, but it was a trial. So they heard this lady play and thought, she's okay, let's get her in. But actually she didn't make it. In my opinion, I felt very sorry for her, because I could relate to the problem she was having, because going from a low pitch orchestra to a high pitch orchestra, or the other way around, it's very difficult.
Oh yeah, of course you had to do that from London to Berlin.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good class to give on.
For about 2 weeks, the second flute player kept telling me, Jimmy, it's flat.
And then you got a flute specially built for that.
I did, but even then.
So these are the kind of things we talk about at our festival, because these are the real life experiences that are gold. Really?
Absolutely. So
come to the Galway Flute Festival here. Excuse me, James. there he is, smiling away there after a concert with that wonderful warm smile. And as we always say, that's what always gives us most joy. Someone said, what are your most memorable concerts? And we thought, and we said, playing Lord of the Rings was nice, playing at the Wall was nice, playing this, playing that, playing for the Queen was nice. But what's really nice is when we play for our students in that nice little chapel that you know, Viviana.
It's beautiful. And, intimate. And
those eager eyes, you know. So that's what we're all about at the Galway Flute Festival. And so is Flute View. We thank you for your support of our work and of flutist work. And that you're back in good health. And you'll get off those crutches soon so you can come over here.
Oh, keep them as long as you can. You know,
For flying, remember when I broke my toe?
They put you first on the plane.
I know this.
Okay.
Well, thank you both so much for your time. I'll
thank
never
you.
forget my very first interview with Sir James. He leaned over to me and says, "Make me famous."
What do you say now? You're telling the students, "Make my day," right?
Oh, yeah.
That's his new thing. He says, what were you saying the other day? Practicing. About the students coming to the festival.
Make my day.
Make my day. He says, "Make my day." Practice. And
like Dirty Harry.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Make my day.
So that's the thing. That's what he wants from his students. Come and play for me and make my day.
So the deadline is April 15th. Send in your applications.
For the auditors, it will go much longer. But for the active, yes. Oh, and we have flute choir. And we have an amazing project for flute choir, but we're not announcing it until after April 15th. So you do get to play in the virtual flute choir. Stephen Clark is involved, and he's already pre-recording all the parts for the students and everything. So it's very exciting.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Great. I'd love to involve maybe Mike. I conduct a flute choir here, the Peninsula Youth Symphony Orchestra flute choir. So
wonderful. Well, Viviana, we'll miss you on low flutes. You know, if you want to join in on the low flute, we'll send you your track. But remember that. How many did we have that year? About six or something, I think, when you played with
the
us.
The more the merrier, I say.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thank you. Send in your applications, galwayfluteFestival.com, June 20 through 25. Thank you both so much for all that you do for all of us.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Flute View podcast. Please give us a rating and leave a comment. The Flute View is sponsored by Flute World, Haynes Flutes, FluteHoot.com, and the University of California, Santa Cruz, where I teach. Please remember to subscribe for only $12.99 a year at theflutview.com.